Alan A. from the Serenity Group in Baltimore, Maryland.
I'm an addict named Alan.
See you out there. Battery probably die in a minute. Wow, thanks, man, thanks. After I share, y'all probably think he's drunk. You know, what do you say, man? What do you say about Narcotics Anonymous? What do you say about something that not only saved your life, but like just woke up your spirit and gave you something worth living for? You know, what do you say? You know, the theme of this is picking up the pieces, and you know what? When I got clean, my sponsor said, write a list of what you want Narcotics Anonymous to give you. Write a list of what you want out of this program. And I got a piece of paper out, and I sat down, and I thought long and hard, and I prayed, and whatever I knew about prayer. And I thought, and I thought, and I thought, and I said, you know what, I'll come back to that tomorrow. And a couple days later, I'm thinking, and I wrote, I want a new motorcycle and a hot chick. That was my list of what I wanted out of Narcotics Anonymous. If you would have told me how my life would be today, I don't know if I would have called you a liar. I just know in my mind that there would have been no conceivable way that would have happened. None. None. I'm talking about like coming to Narcotics Anonymous, and I share this all the time. Look, I needed about that much room in my life. That's all I needed was a place to put my feet or my butt so I could use. And that was it. It was about finding ways and means to get more. It was about robbing my parents. It was about robbing my friends. It was about sleeping with my friends' girlfriends, sleeping with my friends' wives. It was about me getting what I needed to get. And if you got hurt, I'd lie. I would deny. I would tell you, you know, it wasn't me. It looked like me. Had my clothes on, but it wasn't me. You know, a typical day back in the using time was coming to, not waking up, but coming to at any given time, one in the afternoon, waking up screaming at the neighbor's dog because they're barking. That's what dogs do. I didn't know that. I thought it was personal. Yell out the window at the birds because they're singing their song. I didn't know that's what they were doing. I thought it was personal. And then throwing up out of the window all down the side of the house. And then going in my parents' room and stealing whatever I could grab out of my father's pocket. And today I woke up, and my wife and I looked out over the river where we live. We live on the water, a big, beautiful home. And we loaded up. She went for a run this morning. I should have went for a run. And we got in the car after we packed it all up. We stopped. We had a lovely lunch. We drove some more. We stopped because we saw a sign that said covered bridge. We don't have them in Baltimore. And we went on the covered bridge in the rain and we took pictures. We drove a little farther and we saw a place called the Buffalo Store or something Buffalo. And I'm in the native stuff. We went in. We spent more money than we should have. We drove a little farther and I saw a sign that said Flight 93 Memorial. And we drove down there. And we walked around. And something just touches your soul when you see stuff like that. I don't know about you, it touches my soul. Because Narcotics Anonymous woke my spirit up. And we walked in there and we were looking around and it was just so surreal. You know, like all those people died right there on that spot. And, you know, my wife got down on her knee and she said a prayer. And we were both were kind of like just like welled up. Because Narcotics Anonymous gave me a spirit that says, you know what, it's okay to cry. Didn't cry there because there's still that little something in me that says, don't do it here. Because it's just not the right spot. And, you know, we left there and then we came here. And I got here. My wife and I got here and we pulled in. We thought we were lost. We saw cows. I think I saw a guy chasing a sheep. The sheep was screaming, are you my daddy or something? I don't know what was going on with that. And I told my wife, I said, I think we need to leave. Because there are animals in my story. And the sheep kind of looked cute. And we pulled up and we were like, I don't think this is it. This doesn't look like where we're supposed to be. We thought we were lost. And so we came on in and we got out and we were like, you know, camping. Like camping to us is the Hilton. On the ocean. And we got out, we were looking around like, okay, we can adjust. You know, we have camped a couple times in Narcotics Anonymous. And every time, and I'm just going to tell you, when we got here, we were just like, we were so positive coming here. We were so happy, like, yeah, let's go hang out and, you know, do some NA. Because we love Narcotics Anonymous, my wife and I both, man. We travel all over the country for Narcotics Anonymous. But we got here and it was just like, it was rainy. And I'm like, I'm not slopping around in the mud all weekend. There's probably, and I'm looking like there's probably mosquitoes this big. They probably got rattlesnakes and alligators and they got shit out here that you don't want to see. And then look, I'm telling you, man, I'm just being honest. All of a sudden, this negativity came over us. Like, what are we doing here? We don't belong here. Where's the Hilton? And we went to a room, and we were like, oh, my God, look at the mattress. Don't they got Sealy Posturepedic? That's the shower? Like... And it was like, you know what? Let's have fun. Let's just have fun. And just like that, man, we changed our attitude. We changed our attitude, and it's something, and my point is, it's something that they told me a long time ago. They said, Alan, you can change your day anytime you want. You can start over anytime you want. My biggest struggle in recovery in Narcotics Anonymous is remembering all the stuff that you guys teach me. You ever get in the middle of something and be all crazy and goofy and nuts and drive down the road and call your sponsor and call this person and call that person and then 20 minutes later after you ruined six relationships said, I can start my day over anytime I want. Why did I just do all of that? You know, with me, it happens like every 10 minutes. I've smoked a lot of PCP. The last couple years of my using, my cousin, who was my hero, who was my idol, who I looked up to all my life, he had met up with this woman who was an heir to millions of dollars. Drug addict's dream. Because when he hooked up with her, that meant that I hooked up with her. So it was like the three amigos or three stooges, however you want to look at it. And we would drive to a place called Southeast D.C. It's called Suitland Park. And I share a lot of the stories that I share all the time. Because that's my story. It's my story. It's not yours. It doesn't change. It's the same stuff. You know, I can't say I was born in 48. Because I wasn't. Anyway, we would go to Suitland Park. And we were buying bottles of juice. We were making PCP. We were shooting massive amounts of cocaine. Taking 6 and 8 and 10 hits of LSD at the same time. Chasing it with Jack Daniels and drinking Budweiser after that. And it's never enough. It's never enough for me. Look, back at our place where the hell we are. What is that place called? Harmony House. I walked in, the girl said, "Hi, would you like a cupcake?" And I'm thinking, sweetie, you ain't got enough cupcakes in this building when I get started. Don't give me one cupcake. I'll be out here at 3 o'clock in the morning. You'll wake up like, what the fuck happened to the cupcakes? Here I am with little juju beans and shit all over my face. It wasn't me. It looked like me. Probably had my clothes on. But look, it's never enough, man. We had a corn cob pipe and they didn't have crack. But we would put a little bit of cocaine, a little bit of PCP, a little bit of cocaine, a little bit of PCP, and we'd shoot coke and drink Jack, hit that pipe, and then we would get on the phone and call the police. And we'd be like, there's aliens outside, you got to come and get them. They're here, we're watching them. And the police, they'd knock on the door. They're police, they're supposed to show up. And we'd answer the door like, you know, and they're on the radio, yeah, we found the three aliens. You know, in the last couple years, using was like that. So, coming into Narcotics Anonymous and then being here where I'm at today, I just wish I could remember all the stuff that I've learned here. You know, I ended up in Narcotics Anonymous. I grew up in this little household. We were like the Munsters. It was me. I was the baby. I had two older sisters and an older brother. It was me, then my sister, then my brother, then my sister. And mom and dad. And we all used. All of us. All six of us are using in the house. And across the street, we had the Cleavers. It was the Cleavers. It was, really. It was like the Munsters and the Cleavers on the same street. And it was Mr. Jimmy and Miss Diane and little Jimmy and little Jamie. And they were younger than all of us. And at our house, like the grass was really high. The trash cans were, if we had trash cans, were tore up. The lawnmower had three wheels. We didn't have flowers. We had a couple trees, but they died and just fell over. And we're all using. There's always a cop car in the yard looking for me or my brother or my sisters. You know, it was a time before I got my driver's license, I wrecked two cars, totaled them. But there was a time the four of us had totaled like seven cars in 5 years. And my father would just keep getting a new car. It wasn't new. It was a junker. But he would always get one because he had to get to work. And we would be like, can I borrow the car? Oh, go ahead. And we'd wreck. And he'd get another one. And that went on. But the Lewises, like they would come out and cut grass together and rake leaves. And the little boys would be helping. They'd have the bag. And, you know, on Sunday they would get up early in the morning and the father, Mr. Jimmy, he would come out and open the car door and he would start it up. And then Miss Diane would come out and he would open the door for her. Like that was foreign to us. Like he actually opened the door for his wife. She would get in. He would shut the door. The two little boys would come out with their little, they had their little clip-on tie. And they had their little penny loafers and their little Bibles. And they would get in the car and they would drive on down the road. A couple hours later, they come back. And I guess they would go in and eat lunch. And they would come out and then they would work in the yard. And, you know, they had this little family unit going on. Meanwhile, back at the Munsters, we're all coming too. You know, I'm stealing my brother's speed. He's stealing my sister's pot. You know, somebody's robbing my father. And one day, I come out. I come out of the hallway, and I'm probably like 13, hungover. My father is like, he's got his arm on the couch, and he's leaning over looking at them. He's looking at the Lewises. And I come out, and he looks at me as he's looking at them. And he looks at me, and he says, "Those people are fucking weird." I thought that was, he was right. Like, those people are strange. Like, their lights would be off at 9 o'clock at night. They were all asleep. We were just going out at 13 years old. Like, I'm going uptown. And I, you know, I think about stuff like that today, and I think, man, what was wrong with us? You know? And I don't know about you. I don't know. My father had this thing with me and my brother all the time. He would look at me, like right in the eye. He would just look at me like, "Boy, what in the hell is wrong with you?" And I didn't know. I don't know. And I tie that into where I'm at today in my recovery. One of the things I'm learning in my recovery, I think that's a worm or something, is, you know, I used to think like, you know, work the steps and learn stuff and work the steps and become something and work the steps and what I'm learning is I have to work these steps and I got to adhere to spiritual principles and I got to hang out with all you people so I can unbecome something. I need to unbecome what I was taught growing up so I can be my true spiritual self. You know, my mother and father had these parties, big parties on Thursday nights. It was a drinking fest. It was a card game. It was whiskey and beer. And that's where I first started to use at 8 years old. My uncle would hand me beer under the table. He would slip it to me. And man, I was just like, cool. At 8 years old. And then I would run around and fall down and shit. And then they would all laugh. "Oh, look at him, look at him." I thought it was cool. And my uncle would tell me. And I'll always remember. Some of you may get this. It'll hit you later. He would say, always remember this. And this was pertaining to relationships. Every smart rabbit has at least two holes to go in and out of. And what he was telling me was, don't be faithful. Have a couple women. This was my uncle who I thought was like God. So as a young child, I learned that. And I remember being in 10th and 11th and 12th grade and having like three girlfriends. And thinking, like, these guys with one girlfriend are missing out. And I look at that now and I think, man, what was I taught growing up? So, you know, I got in Narcotics Anonymous many years later. You know, what happened for me was a buddy of mine, he showed up at my, I had moved to Virginia Beach, came back, and he showed up at the door. And I had gotten this guy high the first time in his life. And then years later, we split ways. I moved out of town. And then years later, I came back, and he showed up at my door. And he said, I heard you're back in town. You want to go to a meeting? He raced horses. He was a jockey. And when we were using, he would have to go through the track to get tested. Like they would check his jockey license, like a driver's license for horses, I guess. And they would, I guess they would do a urinalysis. They would make sure his credentials were straight to see if he could race for that weekend. I thought that he was taking me to the track because he was going to a meeting. And we ended up in a place where there was a bunch of people smoking and drinking coffee, and it was called Narcotics Anonymous. I was a biker, and I look in the mirror today and I think, the hell did NA do to me? I was like, look, man, I'm telling you, man, I had really long hair. I didn't like clothes. I had a black vest and a brown vest. I never had clothes on them. They were always open. I had big silver rings on every finger. I had a pair of jeans that were all ripped up. The knees were ripped all the way around, held on by threads. I had the big biker wallet. My back pocket had a big hole in it. And if I moved wrong, the wallet would fall out of my pocket and hang down behind my legs, and I'd have to pull it back up and reposition it in my pocket. And that fell out like every 40 seconds. And I just would pull my wallet and pull my wallet and pull my wallet. I had the big biker boots with silver rings hanging on them and had worn off on my fingers. And that, you know, the backs of them were worn out because they were cheap. But I had them hanging on my boots, and my boots, the front of them were worn out. Because on the bike, I would, like, hit the road, drag the road, and they were all ripped. And when it would rain, my socks would get wet and hang out like two big floppy tongues. I had a great big choker chain around my, a dog chain, like a tow chain for a car, around my neck tied on with a piece of leather. I wore bandanas all the time and mirror sunglasses everywhere I went. Even at one of these things, I'd have mirror sunglasses on. I don't know why. Because it was cool, probably. And I remember I walked into the NA meeting with this guy, Craig. And I remember I sat down, and I'm sitting there, and he's like, come on, man, you know, it'll be good for you. And I'm sitting there looking around at all you guys, and I'm like, man, thank God I'm here. Thank God I'm here, because these fucking people need help. Like, I looked at you guys, and you all were lost. Of course, I had all my coolness on. So, we go to that meeting, and after, I didn't hear nothing. I really didn't. I don't remember anything that happened. All I knew was, I looked around, I was like, I'll sleep with her. I'll sleep with her. I'll sleep with her. I'll sleep with her. Shit, I might even do him. I don't know. So after the meeting, Craig was like, so what'd you think, man? What'd you think? I said, Craig, if that's what you need to do, I'll help you. I'm here for you. I didn't know nothing about how this stuff worked. I thought that I was helping him. I didn't know. So he said, you want to go again? I said, if, you know, I'll help you, sure. So he's like, I'll pick you up tomorrow. He picked me up. We went to another meeting. We went to three or four meetings. And we were sitting in the meeting, and there was a girl that she drank lots of coffee, like always getting coffee. I know today it wasn't a coffee addiction. It was she needed people to look at her. And we all have them in our area. We all know them. You know, they get up 20 times. They come in late. They got to fucking hug 12 people. And they get up 20 times during the meeting. They prance across the meeting. So I'm sitting in the meeting, and she walks by, and I'm sitting there all cool, and she walked by me again, and then she just kind of like stopped in front of me and looked, and she said, My sponsor said I need to stay away from you. It was like a Charlie Brown movie. You know Charlie Brown, like, wah, wah, wah. When she said that, I didn't hear it. What I heard, she said, I want to sleep with you. And I was like, yes. So she got on the back of my motorcycle and we rode off into recovery heaven. And I was like, man, this fucking NA shit is happening. We were in a long-term NA relationship at a month and a half. And this other girl walked in the meeting and she looked at me and smiled like a little smile like, hi, how are you? And I knew what that meant. She got on the back of the motorcycle. We rode off, had a long-term NA relationship, about 2 weeks. And then my buddy Craig came up to me and said, man, you know what you need? And I thought he was going to tell me that there was another girl in the meeting, a new girl, that I needed to give her a ride. And he said, you need a sponsor. I was like, a sponsor? And I'm thinking, I'm here to help you. Like, I'm not into this thing. So out of a resentment, I got a sponsor. I went up to this guy, and this guy had... And look, man, I was one of them guys, man. I went to all the therapists. I had special classes in school. You know, at 13 years old, I was arrested for attempted murder on a guy. I didn't do anything. It looked like me. He had my clothes on, but it wasn't me. And I was on probation from the time I was 13, juvenile probation from 13 until I was like 22. And then I got off and I got right back on, like 6 weeks later or something. And then I was on it until I was clean. And then I got back on it again clean. For assault and battery, I slapped one of my ex-wives. It was one's too many, a thousand's never enough. And so I went, one of my wives took me to church, and the whole congregation, I think, like, she would call ahead of time, like, I'm bringing him in. And we would go in, and I would sit there like, I am not into this. And the preacher would be talking, and I'm not knocking, if you're into religion, that's great. I'm just telling you my story. But he would be talking like way over there in the woods somewhere. And he'd be giving his sermon and, you know, the Lord this and whatever and blah, 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 blah. And the next thing you know, somehow or the other, he ended up right in my face like, there's someone here that needs healing today. And I'm just sitting here like, how does he know? And they would stand me up and they would walk me in front of the congregation and they would, man, they'd be crying and laying hands on me and heal this child, and I would leave and use. And I had judges, probation officers, special teachers, all them people trying to help me in my life. And what happened was, I walked into Narcotics Anonymous, and there was a guy that had been arrested 144 times. He had robbed banks, smoked lots of PCP. I don't know if I told you, I love PCP. I smoked a lot of PCP. But he talked about step work. He talked about service. He talked about H&I. He talked about giving it back. And he would say simple things like, you can do anything you want here, as long as you go to a meeting first and you're willing to pay the consequences. He would say simple stuff like that. There was another guy there that would say simple stuff like, how do you let go? And I'd be still on the edge of my seat like, I don't know. And he would say it again. He'd say, how do you let go? I'd be like, please fucking tell me. And he would look around, how do you let go? And then he would say real quiet, hold on. Hold on. And I would be like, that's fucking just, no. That ain't the answer. And after the meeting, I would go up and be like, Nathaniel, what the fuck are you speaking, Japanese? How do I let go? Alan, hold on. That no does not compute. How do I let go? Hold on. And I would walk away all frustrated, like, fuck him. Talking gibberish shit. And I would stay in a sick relationship and drag it out and stalk and call. And God, thank God we didn't have cell phones back then. Verizon would have probably been locking me up. A couple months later, I'd see him. And he'd just look at me. And I would say, Nathaniel, please. Please tell me, how do you let go? Hold on. I'm like, what are you talking about? I said, you want to let go? Hold on. I said, I don't understand. He said, keep holding on. And I'd leave, fuck him. A couple months later, I'm still in that sick relationship. And then I finally figured it out. If you grab a hot pan, how do you let go? Keep holding on. So soon enough, the pain is going to get great enough to let you let go. It took me a long time to understand that. And just like I was talking about in the beginning, there are things that happen today, not nowhere near as bad as it used to be, but I can do something and then I'm like, why didn't I just let go a long time ago? You know, a sponsee relationship. You know, where you know it's not right. You know it's not right. But you try and you try and you try. Or today what happens is, and this is a touchy subject, but I'm just going to get honest where I'm at with it. I got clean in 1986. I've been here a long time to some people. To some people, I'm a newcomer. And I've experienced that. I've sat at a table with like 10 men and me, and the least amount of time there was me, and they all had like over 38 years clean. So I felt new. But how about for me, and I'm just sharing this for me, and maybe somebody can relate probably. How about when you do something in recovery, and you know that you should not be fucking with that person. They've been around here since 1980. They can't get longer than a year clean. And every time they come in, they rob people. And I'm not saying we don't help people. I'm not saying that. Please don't get it twisted. But you take them on. You give them a job. You do this. You do that. You lend them a little bit of money because they're begging. And I need a phone. And you give them a phone. And you already know in your head, shouldn't be doing this. And then 3 months later, a month later, they rob you, they steal from you. And now, they're in the meetings talking about you. How screwed up you are with all these years clean. What do you do with that? What do you do with stuff like that? You know, my wife and I, we own a few homes and we rent them out. And we had a guy move into one of our homes. He started stealing everything in the house. Everything. Taking it out in truckloads. The neighbors are calling me. Alan, they're here. Hurry up. Man, I jump in my truck. I zoom down the road. I go over there. I'm calling the cops on the way. I get there. The cops are there. And the guy's girlfriend's there. And she tells the cop, I don't want him on this property. And the cop says, Mr. Anthony, I'm sorry. They got tenant rights. I said, but they're stealing all my shit. You see him. He's like, look, I know. I understand. The only thing you can do is have him evicted. So we go through this, right? I'm talking about months. They wipe out the whole house. Everything in the house. And then you hear 2 days ago, oh yeah, that guy, he's back in meetings now. Now what do you do? Now what do you do? You know, they lived there for about 8 months, didn't pay rent, couldn't turn the electric off, couldn't turn the water off, because it's against the law. They lived there for free, they stole everything in the house, and now they're back in meetings. We pressed charges, the cops never found them, whatever, who knows. Now what do you do when you walk in a meeting and they're there? What do? You know, and my wife said today, because I just told her, I said, yeah, so-and-so said so-and-so's back in the meetings. And the first thought is, baseball bat. But then, look, and I'm talking about recovery. And my wife said it. She said, hopefully he will stay clean. Now there's motives. Hopefully he'll stay clean and he'll hurry up and get to his amends. Right? And we have a bunch of people that we have to sit in meetings like that with. And they'll sit in meetings and they'll look at me and my wife and just shake their head like, assholes. And it's like, we helped you. We've been over backwards for you. We gave you a place to live. You know. Who knows why I talked about that? Somebody in here needed to hear it. Maybe I needed to hear it. You know, life goes on. Life goes on. You know, I heard a meeting today here. They were talking about sponsorship. And you know what? Something's coming up, man, because evidently somebody needs to hear it or I need to hear it. And I was listening to the sponsorship meeting today right here, and I was thinking about my old sponsor. I had a sponsor for like, I don't know, 15, 18 years. Did all 12 steps with him two, three times. He robbed me for about $6,000. He ended up paying like half of it back because him and my wife talked and she was like, you know, you owe us, man. And he's like, well, this is what I got. And he gave us that. And my wife, see, my wife is like, you know what? A bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. So that we took that and it was like, whatever. But how do you deal with that? Picking up the pieces. How do you deal with that? You know, and I would go to meetings. I would go to meetings. And he would walk in, and he would see me, and he would leave. And my first thought is, baseball bat. And what I did was, I saw him in a meeting one night, and I went up and I hugged him. And I said, man, look, don't leave meetings when I'm here. And you know, he plays that cool show. Oh, I didn't leave because you're here. I said, all I'm telling you, man, is don't get up and leave because I'm here. You know, Rich was talking about Seven Springs, and it's weird because me and my wife, we were coming up here, and somebody from Seven Springs called her to come do the meeting. And Rich was like, I think it was 10 years ago. But see, she already told me how long ago it was. It was 13 years ago. She talked about that today. I didn't remember because I smoked a lot of PCP. I don't know if I told you that. But we were talking about that, and I don't even know what the hell I was talking about. But anyway, I go to... I ended up, man, in recovery, and I think where I'm at right now in my story is, like, don't ever give up hope. Don't ever give up hope. Look, when I got here, man, I was lost, dazed, and confused, thought I was 10 feet tall, stainless steel, and bulletproof, and cooler than Cool Hand Luke. And I got here, I worked some steps, and I found out that I was like a scared little boy, I was afraid of everything. I'm still afraid of things today. I used to be a really big people person, and today I'm afraid of people. Not physically, I'm just afraid of getting close to people. Like a lot of times when I go to a meeting, man, I walk in and I sit down. I'll put my arms out on a couple chairs, and all that is a sign saying, stay the fuck away from me. Seriously, I do it. And I'm trying to work on that. But probably just because being hurt so much in recovery from people. And the reality of it is, what I have to do is I have to look at why I get in relationships like that. Why do I lend people money? Why do I give people a phone? Why do I give? Knowing the results. Insanity. So, I don't know, 13 years ago, 14 years ago, I got some really bad news. My health was failing, and the nurse told me I was like dying. And so I had resumed my life to sitting on my couch eating Breyers vanilla ice cream and dying clean. And I'm talking about the disease of addiction. I'm talking about, if you're new, you'll be like, what the hell is he talking about? I'm talking about how the disease will manifest itself in other areas of our life. So I said, you know what, I'm going to be single, because I was here for years and I was almost like a whore. And I said, you know what, I'm going to sit on this couch. I'm not getting in a relationship. I'm going to be a single and alone and just die right here, and I'm okay with that. I had resigned to that. So I got some ice cream, Breyers vanilla ice cream, like a little bucket. And I started eating it. And I was like, man, that's really good. So I got a half a gallon, because that little cup just didn't get it after the first day. So I got a half a gallon of Breyers vanilla, and I said, man, that is really good. So I ended up getting a half gallon of Breyers vanilla, and some chocolate would really be good with that. So I got a half gallon of Breyers vanilla and a half gallon of Breyers chocolate. And I had to buy a special spoon. It wouldn't bend. So I got this really nice big stainless steel spoon. And then I got this really great big special ice cream bowl. And I would go home after the meeting, and I would... Remember PCP and cocaine and PCP? I would put a little bit of vanilla on the bottom, and a little bit of chocolate, and a little bit of vanilla, and a little bit of chocolate. And then, it's never enough, man. It's never enough. I would smash it in the bowl and pile it on and smash it in so I could, like, completely fill it up and let it bubble out. It's never enough. So now I'm getting Breyers vanilla, half gallon, Breyers chocolate, half gallon. Strawberry on top of that is really good. So now I'm buying 3 half gallons like every 2 days. It's never enough. Talking about the disease of addiction. So I'm sitting there one night and I'm eating all this shit and I'm like, man, this is really good. This is really good. Some Oreo cookies would be really, really good with this. So now I got a great big ass bowl, a big bowl of ice cream, and a big box of Oreo cookies, and I'm going to town. And I can't stop. And I'm just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I went up to like 268 pounds. I'm not supposed to be 268 pounds. Nobody on earth is supposed to be 268 pounds. Small baby elephants and hippopotamus are supposed to be 268 pounds. And pickup trucks. So, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, I'm not even in recovery by what I'm doing. This is full-blown using. Now, I didn't relapse, but I'm killing myself a day at a time, a spoon at a time. So I called a friend of mine in recovery. You never know where you're going to get your help. If you need anything in recovery, you can find it. Called a buddy of mine. He was like a fitness guru. And I said, look, man, I need help. I need a food sponsor. And he said, well, look, this is what you do. Stop eating this, 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 and this. And start eating this and this and this and this in replacement of that. And get out and walk. Every day. Just walk. He said, it's going to be hard at first, man. Walk a half a mile. Walk a mile. After a week, you can walk a couple miles. After that, you can walk 3 miles. And I did. Man, I was out there just burning the pavement up. Stopped eating all that stuff. And I went down to like 186 pounds. Everybody thought I was smoking crack and dying. Because I'm really not supposed to be 186 either. Anyway. So I go to this meeting. Couple of newcomer guys that I sponsored. And they want to go to this dance. I said, I'm not going to the dance. I'm old, I'm dying, I'm not going to the dance. Well, they took group conscience. I lost. They voted, I lost. So we went to the dance. And I walked in, and I'm just like sitting there all cool. And they're out there, man, they're neuter. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they come running over to me, check her out, man, she wants me. I said, go get her, tiger. So I'm sitting there, minding my own business. And I see this leg. This leg came, it was like this, look, it was like a mile long. And there was this woman attached to the end of it. And look, my first thought was, no, it wasn't baseball bat. My first thought was, I will tear that up. And about 5 minutes later, she walked across the room and she was just like, what is your name? Where are you from? Don't I know you? Didn't I see you at my home? I'm like, whoa, back the fuck up. All over me. And that was like 13 years ago. And we've been together ever since. We went to the World Convention in Texas years ago. We got married down there on the beach, South Padre Island, after the World Convention. We go to conventions all over the world. Travel all the time to NA conventions and speaker jams and campouts and love campouts. And she's like my soulmate. And so we got together, and I remember, man, look. I remember I was laying on my couch eating cookies and ice cream. And then I changed my frame of mind, just like I talked about changing our frame of mind here today. I changed my frame of mind like, I'm not dying, I'm living. I'm going to live. 15 years ago, they told me I was dying. So I made up my mind that I was going to live, and I started walking and losing weight, and I went to this dance, and this woman attacked me. She held me at gunpoint and said, you're going to sleep with me. We're going to get married. Now, I remember we went out on this date, like our first official date. We went out. She had to speak at a meeting, and I had to speak at a meeting, at like 50 miles apart, but then we hooked up afterwards and went like on this little date. And I remember when I was single on my couch, and I remember sitting there and I was thinking how lonely I was and how alone I felt. And I remember just like talking to God, like, I would just like to have a foot to rub, because I was so detached from like human touch. I said, I just would like to have a foot. I don't even need a whole body. Just want to rub a fucking foot. So we hook up, we go, I don't know, we went and I think we played pool or something. Maybe. I don't know, I smoked a lot of PCP. But I remember we went to her house afterwards. And she sat on one end of the couch and I sat on the other end of the couch. And you know how it is, man. When you do that first date shit, you're trying to be all polite and like, yes, hi, how are you? And, yes, would you like some mutter? Yes. You know, they can come out and say, hey, you want to go upstairs and fuck like rabbits? And you're like, oh, I don't think we should do that. Maybe we should pray first. You know, you want to, you know, you just, you're trying to be like in recovery and spiritual. And so we're sitting there on this couch. And she's there, and I'm like, it was really fun tonight, and, you know, all that stuff we do. And I looked at her feet. And I remembered that prayer. And I said, do you mind if I rub your feet? And she said, there's some lotion right there on that nightstand. Look, I should have knew right then. But we've been together ever since. And life rolls on. So she had heard me share a meeting before. And after, I don't know when it was. Time eludes me. And she was like, so what is wrong with you? And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, don't you have a lot of health issues? I said, yeah. She said, well, what's going on? I told her. And she said, well, look, I got to go. Click up. And I'm like, fuck. Like it's all over. Like it's gone. So we hooked up again. We went out. And life rolls on. You know, I have two children. She has a daughter. I have two daughters. And both of my daughters are using. They both have children. And they can't stop. They both have been to Narcotics Anonymous. They both have had clean time. And now they just say NA is stupid. And there's nothing I can do. You know, if you want to talk about powerlessness, your two little girls are on heroin and they can't stop. They got kids, little kids. You know, I was talking to my oldest daughter a few months ago, because now she doesn't even talk to me now, because, and it's hard for me to grasp that. But, you know, my wife is like, Aaron, when you were using, were you talking to your parents? You know, when they would call, I wouldn't answer. But I talked to her, I don't know, 3-4 months ago, and I'm, you know, how you doing? What's going on? How are the kids? Everything's great. Everything's fucking woo-woo. Everything's wonderful, Dad. How are the kids? Oh, they're great. So my wife is on the computer at the same exact time. So I'm like, all right, honey, well, I love you, and I love you too, Dad, and I'll see you later. Okay, bye. And my wife says, Alan, come here a minute. And I'm like, what? She's like, look at this. So I walk over, and the daughter I just got off the phone with, my wife had pulled up the Maryland judiciary, and she's all over it. She got, her house got raided. She's got child neglect charges, distribution charges, like all these charges. And it was only like a week before, and it's like, everything's great. Everything's great. You know, what are you going to do? What do you do? You know, I go to my home group, I make sure the coffee's made. Maybe one day they'll show up again. Maybe one day they'll come back. I don't know. You know, so real quick, I don't have long. I got sicker and sicker. I had a kidney disease. Both my kidneys were infected with a disease. Your kidney's like, I don't know, the size of this rock. Mine were like 31 pounds. Were huge. And over time, it was like, you know, you need a transplant. You got to find someone to donate. And, you know, what do you do, man? You know, you need a kidney. Hey, Rich, man, can I get a kidney? Look, he's like, you know, what do you do? You know, now we know people all over the world, man. I mean, in the country, I know people in every state from Narcotics Anonymous. So my wife says, I know what we'll do. We'll go on Facebook. So my wife put on Facebook, dear friends, it's time for Alan's kidney transplant. If anybody wants to give the gift of life, please send us a private message. Now, the other thing with me is I'm O negative blood. So I can give to like everybody here, but only O negative people can give to me. So kind of a weird thing. But anyway, we're in Florida. We go to this convention before she put it on Facebook. We go to this convention while we're there in Florida. I'm in this meeting. It was a regular workshop meeting. And I see this young lady. She was my daughter's age. She reminded me of my daughter for some reason. I don't know why. But, man, she's got this N.A. glow about her. She's just, like, smiling and just she's just glowing with N.A. love. She must have knew the speaker that spoke at the workshop because she's clapping. Yay! So I'm sitting there looking at her. And now, just before we went through the convention, I got a phone call from the bank in Maryland. We're in Florida. And they're telling me that my daughter's there. I had this bank account set up for my daughter. She was in there wiping it out. Like 30 here, 40 there. 30 here, 40 there. And the woman called me and sat down. She's taking the last $40. You want me to give it to her and close the account? I said, fuck it, give it to her. I know what that is. 20, 30, 40, 20, 30. I know what she's doing. So I got all that in my head. And I'm in this meeting. And I'm like, man, this is screwed up. This little girl's clean and she's happy. I wish that my daughters could do this. I just wish they could be here. So anyway, after that, I get up and the girl, she's clapping and she's rah-rah, and I walk over and I give her a hug. I'm like, man, thank you so much for being here. Because I know that one day, like if my daughter's coming here, that's like the person that's going to help my daughter. It's not going to be somebody like me. It's going to be some young lady. So I told her, I said, man, thank you for being here so much. And she's like, oh, cool, dude. She's like, thank you for being here, too. She's like, what is your name? And I said, you know, I was on the phone. I said, I'm Alan from Baltimore. And she's like, oh, wow, you're the guy. You're the guy I was doing their banquet. She's like, you're the guy. You're doing the meeting. And so we bonded. We made a friendship. Me and her and my wife took pictures that weekend. We all hung out. So when I spoke Saturday night at that convention, I talked about this young lady, Haley, and how she had touched my heart. So all of Haley's friends in Florida, now she's famous. Because now they're blowing her phone up like, how the hell do you know this guy in Baltimore? Like, you know him? Like, he's talking about you. Like, so she becomes famous. So, now this was 2010. So we were just down there again. And she was like, she lived like 3-4 hours away. And we keep in contact, and she came down to Boca Raton and hooked up with us and hung out all weekend. Anyway, so we get home, and we're still friends, and my wife goes on Facebook and posts, dear friends, if you want to give the gift of life, you know. So the next morning, she's like, Alan, come here. I said, what's up? She said, look at the computer. So I walk over, and on the computer, there's like 10 messages. Of people all in Narcotics Anonymous all over the country. Like, I'm O negative and I'll give you a kidney. I'm O negative and I'll give you a kidney. I'll give you a kidney. I'll give you a kidney. So, like, the next 2 days later, I get a private message. And I open it up. And, you know, I get private messages like that all the time. And it's usually like, send Bob Wahooey. And it's like, come look at my boobs.com or some shit. You know, you whatever. So the private message said, "Hello, my name is Roberta Dean. You don't know me, but you met my daughter, Haley, at a convention, and you touched her heart. And I just wanted to let you know, I'll give you a kidney." And it was just like, I don't know this woman from a can of paint. So we didn't get her kidney because she was in Florida, but we had another lady, Ellen P., and she ended up wanting, she was like, I'm going to do it. And it was like 6 months of like hardcore tests where she had to go to the hospital and she had to get tested. And she ended up giving me a kidney. Little teeny woman. So now my kidney's not in my back. I got a kidney up front. And thank God for that lady. Because I got a whole new lease on life. You know, we hang out. We talk. And we didn't really know her before. You know, I didn't know her any better than I know Richard. I didn't know her any better than I know Tony. It was just like... She was kind of in Baltimore, but we never, well, you know, we just weren't in that circle. Because Baltimore, NA, is really big. So she gave me a kidney, and it was a struggle. You know, no pain meds. We had a plan. Me and my wife had a plan of something that we wanted to do. We wanted to go to an out-of-state convention. We went to California before the operation. I wanted to do 3 steps in 90 days before the operation. So I did 3 steps, went over with my sponsor. We had it set up after the operation. We would have CDs, speaker CDs, and the CD player right there for me. I have my step book and all that stuff there. And we already had it set up for people to come to the house and bring meetings to the house. And one of the biggest things that we did when we went in, we knew that they were going to throw pain medication at us. So many people are going out on pain medication. So for us, the plan was, it was against the law. It was against the law for me to leave with a prescription of pain medication. They cut me from my privates all the way up to the top of my chest, laid me all the way open. It was a 10.5 hour operation. So don't tell me about, oh, but my fucking finger hurts. I need Percocets. Fuck you! So we left. They tried to give us all kinds of stuff. They were like, look, we were leaving, and we were like, we don't want nothing. Well, I'm just going to put these prescriptions in your file. It's like, no, I don't want them. Like, we had to, like, verbally get an altercation almost. Like, I don't want the shit. Well, we'll just put it in your pocket here. We'll just put it right... No! I don't want that shit. Fuck, you think them cupcakes are bad? Somebody earlier was talking, Will from Ball, and he was like, yeah, I heard you talk about frozen bananas one time. Look, man, I was eating like 12 frozen bananas every night at 11 o'clock. I went to my doctor. He's like, okay, let's look at your blood. Oh, this is good. This is good. Whoa, what the fuck? I'm like, is it my potassium? He's like, my God, it's off the... I said, don't even... I'll fix it. Don't even worry about it. I'm serious, man. Look, my wife said, here, you want these frozen bananas? She lets them rot. Then she peels them. She puts them in the bag and freezes them for a couple days. You take them out hard, bite them off, and they're friggin' delicious. 11 and 12 every night. Before I went to bed, I couldn't stop. Like a monkey. Don't give me a cupcake. Well, my wife and I drove up here today. And we had such a great time. It was so peaceful and so calm. And we do that all the time. We very, very rarely argue. Usually our argument is like, she'll be like, you got a sound in your voice. No, I don't. Yes, you do. I heard it. It was a tone. I'm like, honey, I didn't have a tone in my voice. Yes, you did. I heard it. Okay. The tone. Got my bug spray. I'm going to read something. So anyway, look. So we're into this stuff. We do stuff at home. Spiritual stuff. Native stuff. And we love it. So October the 18th, our little buddy Haley is coming up from Florida. She's like 28, maybe 25, something. When we met her, she had 2 years clean. Now she's got six. But she's coming up. She's flying up the 18th by herself. She's never been on a plane. Never seen snow. Never seen mountains. So we invited her up to come up and hang out with us for the weekend. And she's so excited. You go on Facebook, friend requests me. She's on there. You guys can say hello to a famous person. She's just a little sweetheart. And I think, well, I don't think, I know the reason why I'm drawn to her is because of my daughters. And it's just one of them things that touches me. I don't know if I can see or not. Yep. So anyway, rock. That's a big rock. I never smoke crack, so. That would probably be a big rock, huh? 5-pounder. Anyway, look, man, I like to have fun. I like to mess with people. I love to have fun. So let's have fun this weekend. You know, let's pick up the pieces. If you got something going on, man, talk to somebody. Don't take that shit home. You know, these are the places to get rid of stuff like this. You know, talking about picking up the pieces, you know, I stopped cussing women. I've never cussed my wife. Never have cussed my wife. Never have never called her out a name. I've never even called her a bitch. Oh, I've thought it. A lot. But I haven't. She's right there. You can ask her. No, she's not. I left her in the cabin. But she's right there. I just don't. I mean, you know, I just don't do that. I change those ways. You know, I quit smoking when I had the day that I had 10 years clean. I realized it was killing me. You know, I realized it was killing me. And one of the big things that made me wake up to that was Jimmy Kennan started Narcotics Anonymous with some other people. He died because of cigarettes. A lot younger than he should have died. Bill Wilson started another program. He died because of cigarettes. Why be clean and kill myself? So the day that I had 10 years clean, I quit smoking cigarettes. I quit drinking coffee probably, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And then I went to decaf. And I drank that for a few years. I haven't drank any of that for years. I don't drink sodas. And if you do, that's fine. It, you know, you can smoke and vape and drink energy drinks and stick stuff up your butt. I don't care what you do. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you what I do. So please don't leave like, oh, fuck him. Who's he think he is? It's nothing like that. I'm about total love and total acceptance. Just don't blow that shit in my face. I try not to eat cupcakes. I try. I do. I try. But if you fucking talk to me long enough, I'll probably be out there with you. You know, I'm not perfect. I told my wife, I said, this year I'm quitting cussing. I just want to try to do that again. You know, I did it once in recovery for like 2 years. I didn't even say the word shit for 2 years. I felt like a little choir boy or something like that. Every now and then you need to say, fuck! That motherfucker pissed me off. But I want to try to get away from that because I don't like it. I don't like when I say it. If you want to say fucking bitch and not smoke and vape and drink energy drinks and fuck, go ahead. I'm trying to not do that. I love this program. If you're new to this, man, if this is your first one or you got a few days clean and you're coming back, man, there's hope here. There's hope. There is hope. We have a promise of freedom from active addiction that any addict can stop using. Any addict can stop using. If you think you're that guy or girl that it ain't going to work for you, it can work for you. You just might have to change some stuff that you're doing. You know, you can't come into NA and go to the strip clubs and gamble and you know, pick up prostitutes and all that shit. I'm not saying you don't have to do it. If you want to pick up prostitution, gambling, smoke, and vape, and all that shit, go ahead. But if you want to change your life, change your life. It's a program of change. Why stay the same? Anyway, look. Old-timers will really get this. Maybe some new people will, too. Maybe you're that new person, Richard. Maybe. So you go to your home group. You got time, man. You're like the person with time. You get off work and you go to your home group. And look, all you want to do, man, all you're thinking about is, man, I can't wait to get home and eat that great big-ass $27 steak that I bought. Sit on my $5,000 couch and watch my 96-foot flat-screen TV. You go in the meeting and you're there. And you sit down, you spread your arms out so nobody comes near you, stay the fuck away. And you just kick back like, wow, I can't wait to get home and eat that steak. The speaker speaks and you don't even know what's going on because all you're thinking about is that juice. And some people might be thinking about cupcakes. And the meeting's over, man, and you're like, it's almost over. The speaker's almost done, and you see them. They're like looking all the way across the room at you, and they are fucking looking at you. They're just like, they're looking at you, man, fucking all cockeyed and shit, and you can smell them, and they're shaking and twitching. And you're like, oh, fuck. And you look at them, man, and they got a pen and a phone book. And they're like burning a hole in you. And you're like, oh, shit. And they're looking at you. And after the meeting, you get in the circle, and you kind of look around the circle, and you zoom past them, and they're fucking looking at you. You're like, oh, God. Meeting's over. Here they come, knocking shit down, tripping over chair. Hey! Hey, man, hey! And you're like, oh, fuck. And you're talking to the wall, like, you're like trying to spiritually evaporate, like, I'm not here, you can't see me. It looks like me. Here they come, man. Hey! Hey! And you look at him and you're like, that's that fucking Richard L. guy. Oh, my God. Hey, man. Will you sponsor me? And you're looking at him like, oh, my God. And right up in your face. And they stink. And they're dirty. And you can feel spittle hitting your face. And they got the pen. And you're like, hey. Hey, man. Hey. Hey. Will you help me? Would you please help me? Because I don't want to use. Please help me. Would you sponsor me? And everything in you says, give them the fucking Pizza Hut number. You're like, sure, man, here, get my number. Would you please help me because I can't stop using? And you're like, sure, man, look, here's what you do, man. You get the triangle self-obsession. You write like 200 pages on it. And you call me when you're done and we'll talk about sponsorship. Okay. And they leave and you're like, whew, son of a bitch. Got rid of him. You go home, man. You have your big steak. Lay on your $5,000 couch. Go up in your king-size bed. Fall asleep. 3 a.m. Ring, ring, ring. Hello. Hey. Hey. It's me. You remember me, Richard, from the meeting? Yeah, man, yeah. What are you doing? And your first thought is...
And you say, I'm just sitting here waiting for you to call, bro. I wrote that triangle. You said 200, I wrote 300. When can we get together? I'll call you tomorrow, man. As soon as I get off work, I'll call you. Okay. You get off work, man. You come home. You pull up in your driveway. It's like, is that fucking Richard guy sitting on my step? Hey! What medium we going to? You get out. You walk up to the door, man. You're like, look, I'm going to go and get a shower. You stay right here. Don't fucking touch nothing. And you run up the steps as fast as you can. You jump in, man. You don't even use soap. You just fucking get wet and run out. And you come down. He's on your couch. He's got your remote control. He's eating your leftover steak. He's got your last glass of tea. What meeting are we going to? I don't know, man. We'll find one. You go to the meeting. You get them a cup of coffee. After the meeting, you take them out and buy them a sandwich. You start working with them. You go to the meeting. You go to their home group. And you walk in late. Meeting's going on. They're like, that's my sponsor! Right there! Oh, God. But you work with them. And this is what happens in Narcotics Anonymous. It's in our Just for Today book. January the 25th. It says an added gift. It says we see it happening among us every day. This miraculous turnabout is evidence of a spiritual awakening. We watch them walk into their first meeting defeated. Their spirits are broken. Their suffering is obvious, and their desire for help is even more apparent. They collect a welcome chip, and they go back to their seat, shaken by the effort. You see them again, and they seem a little more comfortable. They found a sponsor. And are attending meetings every night. They still won't meet our glance, but they nod their heads in recognition as we share. We notice a spark of hope in their eyes, and they smile uncertainly when we encourage them to keep coming back. A few months later, they're standing straight. They've learned how to make eye contact. They're working the steps with their sponsor, and they're healing as a result. We listen to them sharing at meetings. We stack chairs with them afterwards. A few years later, they're speaking at a convention workshop. They've got a wonderful, humorous personality. They smile when they see us. They hug us, and they tell us they could have never done it without us. And they understand when we say, nor could we without you. Just for today, I will find joy in witnessing the recovery of another. I'm an addict from Baltimore. Find me on Facebook. You know, keep in touch. I love to keep in touch with people. And I hope everyone here has a great weekend. Thanks.